Please sit down.
You'll be delighted to know there's no sermon this morning. Instead, it seemed appropriate that since Paul and Nikki have been with us now just over 6 months, you've completed your probation.
Thank you.
that we get to know Paul a little bit better. And the suggestion was made by the wardens that we have a time of interview this morning just to explore a little bit of what's behind the vestments, which is one of the reasons why we're dressed in civvies to start the service this morning. So, Paul, let's begin with your name, because I have no difficulty explaining my surname, Adams. I'm a son of Adam. But Paul Bodham White, Wetham, I'm sorry. Where does that come from? It's a strange combination of names.
Yes, I mean, it goes back a little while. But the important thing is that God called me by name and I'm his.
And now that's so escaping the question.
It is. Because I'm not sure it's of great interest to others, but it happened that there was a daughter in the Wetham family. She wanted to marry a Bodham, and in those days, in order to have some inheritance, she needed to combine the names. So that is what happened.
So it does go back sometime.
About 150 years.
About 150 years,
yes.
And you're sort of just a brother. Do you have any brothers or sisters?
I'm the youngest of four, so I have my next brother, then an older sister, and then my oldest brother.
Right, and are they living in the area? Or
no,
close,
my sister lives near Cheltenham now, so we get to see each other quite regularly.
Oh, right, okay. Yeah. Now, I do understand that you haven't spent all of your life in ministry. In fact, there was an early inclination of the career that you pursued for most of your professional life. Do you want to tell us a little bit about what were the triggers that led you into this construction?
Well, construction, that was interesting. I've been 35 years in the construction industry, and I think I was first sparked with it when a bypass was being built at our local town, and I was about 11 when I cycled over to see the construction taking place. So I was fascinated by all the machinery. And then it made me think, as we'd driven by parents on car journeys, just think how incredibly clever it was to get the street lamps on the motorways in one line. Have you ever thought about how that happens? It's one of life's technological miracles.
So that was actually a seed.
It sort of triggered.
Sort of,
yes,
triggered your interest,
yes,
in construction.
Yeah.
I gathered that the Bodham Wethams were a church-going family. So you were sort of a cradle Christian, I suppose, in one sense.
Yes, well, I was going to pick you up on when you said that I wasn't in ministry all my life, but perhaps as Christians, we all actually ought to be in ministry. We are in ministry,
right,
in one way or another,
okay,
in terms of our expressing our faith. That is our ministry.
But that sort of upbringing obviously gave you a sense of what the church was about and the message of the gospel and so on. But you went up to university, and at that point, I think there were some really personal experiences,
yeah,
of your faith.
Yes, there was a mission taking place at university at the time, and I thought, well, I know it all, I don't need to go. The arrogance of an 18-year-old. And a friend at the time said to me, well, come along to the follow-up sessions at least. I said, no, I don't need to go. Anyway, he dragged me there to a follow-up session, and I came to a realization that I did not know what it was all about, and made my own personal profession of faith in Jesus Christ as my personal saviour.
Now, what difference did that make any difference to you?
It did. It sort of began to refocus where my future lay. In fact, I was sent off on what was called Islington Week, which was a week working in Islington, North London, at a church, really to sound out whether I felt I had a calling into ministry. Far too early, really. I'd only just been become a true Christian very, very shortly before. But I did go, again, the arrogance of youth. I went to work for Operation Mobilization. Some of you may have heard of that organization. Still exists today, a great evangelistic organization. And in my arrogance, I went and joined them to convert the Catholics of North Italy to true faith. I've learnt a lot since then. But I drove down there in my little 1958 Standard Pennant. So if anybody remembers those wonderful little cars, that took me to North Italy and back.
Very interesting. Now, you graduated from Cambridge and made some career choices at that point, and your interest in construction clearly was the direction you were going. Did your faith have any influence on maybe the company you worked for, or
yes,
how you took your
yes,
career
it did.
Forward?
Yes, it did. And there were several big companies that I was looking to work for. And I got an offer from several, and one of which was John Lang. And those of you who know perhaps of John Lang and that family may know the life story of John Willie Lang, who lived on he lived on a very tight budget all his life, and he was very generous in all that he gave away. So that was, in my innocence, I thought, well, that's going to pervade the whole company several decades after he had died. But sadly, that wasn't the case, and construction is tough in whichever company. The business went through some tough times, and what one might have hoped would have been a Christian ethic wasn't as evident as one might have hoped it would be.
I mean, I can begin to understand a little bit about you now, trying to get those lampposts in a straight line. You do like things to be in order. You do like things to be organized and tidy. And it is nice to see a construction job being finished and, you know, the roads being swept and everything now crisp and clean. So there's something there about your personality that perhaps... And, of course, a construction job also involves sort of directing many, many people. I mean, does that sort of influence your approach to life as well?
Yes, and it was interesting that after I... After several prompts from God to apply to go forward for training for ordained ministry, I went to a selection panel. It's called a Bishop's Advisory Panel. And... to my surprise, and to many others, I was not recommended on that point. And after 35 years in industry, the reason primarily given was that I was too directive. I hope I've changed a bit. You didn't know me then. And those who do know me did say that after, in that year where I really tried to reform my approach and to step back a little bit, that did influence considerably. And I went forward to a panel the following year. And I know it's so dependent upon who the panelists are, but you could look at the two reports, and they look like two completely different people. I don't think I changed that much. Perhaps Nikki's the one to ask that question privately later.
Well, I'm glad you brought Nikki in, because I'm going to ask you a couple of Mr. and Mrs. questions.
Oh! We didn't prepare for these, did we?
No, we didn't. So to see whether you go forward to the final stage of this interview or not, I'm going to ask you a couple of questions. I asked Nikki, and I would like you to tell me which of these Nikki thought you would say. So what is your... I'm going to give you three options. Good. What is your favourite takeaway food? Pizza? Fish and chips? Or curry?
Well, out of those, it's got to be fish and chips.
One to you. Well done. That's exactly what Nikki said. So she knows you a little, at least, anyway. What do you like to do when you relax? Do you like to read a book? Do you like to watch gangster movies on television? Or do you like to go for a walk? Or is it something else?
Well, it's probably a bit of each, but I think my main relaxation probably is walking the dog. I don't know whether that's going to be a fair response or not. Or is it the gangster movies? That,
It's the gangster movies. Well done. Okay, so that we'll give you 1.5 for that, because you were sort of a little slow on that question. So what did Nikki think that you would take away if you were marooned on a desert island? What one luxury item would you take to a desert island?
Well, it wouldn't really be much use, but it probably would be my iPad.
Nikki said computer. And I was going to ask you that follow-on question. Do you expect to get Wi-Fi on the desert island?
And look, I'm hands-free this morning.
Oh, there we are. All right, well, I think he deserves to go on to the final stage. That was 2.5. It's a very good sort of score on Mr. and Mrs. So now, the church that you and Nikki spent a large part of your life at in Berkhamsted, tell us a little bit about that church. How big was it? I don't mean in the building, but sort of how many people were in it?
Well, I was talking about the people, which is what the church is. A roll of about 170.
Okay.
We arrived having been in Bovingdon for 6 years, which was a sort of middle-of-the-road evangelical church. Sunnyside was much more of an open evangelical church and became more so with the... the current incumbent, current until today, he's retiring today, but he's been there 17 years. So that was a significant part of our time. Interestingly, he came from the Methodist Church. He still does not know why God called him in to be an Anglican minister, but God's ways are mysterious, as you probably have thought yourselves. But he did tend to therefore take the church into a sort of a lower style. An expression that I came across, and some of you may know it, is about how high up the candle is a church. Does anybody know that expression? And I would dare to say that Sunnyside was just about hanging on to the bottom of the saucer. how high up you are.
We do use these terms, don't we, about the church? I mean, the Anglican Church is a very, very diverse, very varied church, and you have churches of different types, and we attach labels. You've already, in that response, you've talked about middle of the road and open, and now low and high. Where do you feel most comfortable in all of those kind of descriptions of church life?
I feel more comfortable at the evangelical lower church end. I'm concerned, it's not something for me, the pomp and ceremony of a high church. Mm-hmm. So somewhere where there is, it seems a little bit as if it's going against the idea of the church being for everybody and the priesthood of all believers. If we do set up a cohort who are symbolically completely different. And that was partly why we decided that, for this at least, it'd be good to see me as I am. I am, after all, the same as everybody. I've been called to a particular ministry. But then, as I said earlier, as Christians, so are we all.
Now, that's a very technical term, theological term, priesthood of all believers. What do you understand by that?
That we each have a purpose and a place in God's kingdom, and a role to perform for him in our ministry.
And yours just happens to be?
Mine is to ordain ministry. Right. Others is ministry in the workplace, perhaps as a nurse, as a teacher, in the family. It may be as a lay minister, as in yours and Ian's cases. But our primary calling is as Christians, and if you like, our secondary calling is to a particular role as Christians.
So this sort of orientation towards an evangelical and low church somewhat explains why you're a bit unsure about ancient English in the liturgy. You prefer modern language.
I'm not unsure about it at all, Dave.
You're not unsure about it? Well, then, tell us more.
Let me explain that, because I know that it does cause some concern. My understanding of the Reformation was that the language of the time, the colloquial language of the time, is what Cranmer wanted to write into his prayer book for the common people. And it was the language spoken of the time. We now have common worship in modern English. And it does seem to me slightly ambiguous when we have modern language and then we occasionally insert traditional language within that. And perhaps I should have explained that before, rather than as having a little bit of a battle on occasion with the modernists and the traditionalists talking out over one another. And that's my reason. My reason being that when we invite people, when we seek the lost and people come to discover God and come to worship here, come to find out about worship here, it needs to be in a language that is understood.
Right. And that extends to other things. I mean, your evangelical convictions perhaps lead to you choosing to use bread, preferring bread rather than wafers, to perhaps have a reticence to position yourself in a pulpit rather than to stand here on the dais. Are all those sort of a part of this?
I think that's in fact, interestingly, in my church, our church of the last 38 years, have not used pulpits. So, in a sense, I just never engage with it, in a sense, because that's been my practice, is always that it's been at a lectern or on the dais.
Birkhamsted says only about 60 miles away, but there seems to be a different culture, in a sense.
But there's a very high church within Birkhamsted as well. So we have the extremes of churchmanship within the one town.
Which is true, I think.
Whitney's not 1 mile away, and there's extremes of churchmanship.
I remember being interviewed by the Whitney little radio project at one point when I was chair of Churches Together in Whitney, And I tried to explain the different churches to him by saying, well, we have a lot of different coffee shops in town. You can do a Starbucks or a Nero's or a Costa or, you know, Coffee Smith, and it's for people to choose.
Yeah, but it's not, in a sense, it's not my style. I'm here as a servant of the church and of the community, and so I must listen and take account of what is traditional and give explanation of why. I mean, if it's theologically important, then I will press the case. Mm. If it's not, well, that's what people are comfortable with.
Now, you're a man of conviction, as well as faith. I'm not going to ask you to nail your 95 theses to the door of the church, but what would you be prepared to go to the stake for as a Christian?
To hold true to declaring that Jesus Christ is my Saviour and my Lord. And we know in our world today that there are indeed Christians who are being persecuted and are being put to death because they are holding to that creed. Mm.
Now, the gospel reading for this morning is interesting because, in fact, you've alluded to it in some of your comments. I didn't anticipate that you would. But here we have the tax collectors and sinners in the gospel reading coming to Jesus. And the Pharisees and the scribes, the religious leaders, grumbling about what was going on and saying, this fellow welcomes sinners and eats with them. Would you be happy for that to be said about you?
Absolutely. And we're all sinners. I mean, I do find sometimes the differentiation is slightly odd in the gospel in suggesting that some aren't. But actually, it's quite clear. The teaching is we are all sinners. We've all fallen short of what God wants of us. And surely we need to be entirely open. We need those walls, in a sense, taken down so that we are much more immersed within the community. And we're starting that a little bit with our open cafe on Thursday. We're trying to say, here is a place where people can come and share together, learn together, talk together, as well as us, of course, reaching out and going out into the community. And one of the ways I find really exciting is the opportunity to follow through, both in the rejoicing times of weddings and baptisms, but also the sad times of funerals, when it's an opportunity to bring the love of God into those lives that they might otherwise not come to.
And there's this image in this gospel reading of the one sheep that was lost and the shepherd going out, leaving the other 99 in the closure and going out for the one. Is that sort of the equivalent of the rector walking his dog around the village?
It's been a fantastic opportunity to meet with people. It really has. It has been great to meet with people who have perhaps seen my notes in the Village magazine and have been able to link two, one and two together. And what I find fascinating, of course, is that to everybody in the village, this is their church. Mm. And that's really important for me to understand that. You know, it's definitely not my church in being possessive. It's all of ours, and it's the village's as well. And that's why we need to be open and welcoming.
There's much more we could talk about, but Paul Bottomwetham, welcome to this church. Give him a call.
Thank you.